Hey everyone, welcome to the Can You Kickstart podcast with Colin Song. Today we're joined by Fred Gallagher. Hey man.
Yeah, hey, how you doing?
Can you tell us a bit about your project?
Sure.
Get straight into it.
Yeah, no, that's fine. My project is, I've been doing a webcomic called Mega Tokyo for about 13 years or so now. It's a comic about two guys who sort of decide to fly to Japan on a whim and sort of get stuck there. It's been collected to about six volumes of manga, still comics, and it's still rolling along as a webcomic. It's been pretty heavily influenced by a lot of different types of Japanese games, including visual novels, which I've been a fan of for many years, and sort of came up with the idea and pursued the idea of actually doing a visual novel game based on the long-running story, and sort of grew out of control and resulted in something that we thought maybe if we did a Kickstarter for it and tried to develop as a project, people might be interested. So.
Yes, it's going extremely well so far. You've met your goal, as it were.
Yeah, just a little bit. I obviously underestimated what the kind of support I'd get. And, anytime you set a Kickstarter goal, I've never done one before, so I look at ones other people had done, and you look at your budget, and it's really about time, how much, and other things, and you try to come up with, well, what's the smallest number that you can do a decent game at so that you can do the project? And then you start thinking about, well, what can we add on if we do a little better? And, well, gosh, we blew through the initial funding of it in about 3.5 hours, which should have been a sign. I should have paid a bit more attention to my stretch goals, which got through a lot faster than I thought. I really seriously had no concept that it would, push beyond, 75,000-80,000 at my most optimistic. And, now it's sitting over 200,000. So, it's I've been using the word boggled a lot about how it's fun. It's definitely been interesting the past couple of weeks, that's for sure.
Sure. So let's talk about the webcomic a little bit before we get into the actual visual novel.
Mm-hmm.
So when did the idea to actually do the webcomic came about? What was the process there?
Years ago, I had one of my friends, a guy named Rodney Casson. Online, I always wanted to do manga. It was always something I was heavily influenced on. This was before manga was very popular here in the States or in the English speaking world. It didn't seem incredibly viable, but I always wanted to do it. So, and he kept bugging me, dude, we got to do a webcomic together. And I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. He just kept bugging me about the concept. So finally, I did a couple of strips based on his nickname and my nickname and our respective personalities, and I just did a couple episodes just to shut him up, really.
You know, 13 years later.
Yeah, and then he posted a couple of them, and then at some point, and the guys from Penny Arcade linked us, and all of a sudden we had expectations that we were actually going to do this comic. So, and I've been trying to catch up ever since. So, kind of the history of it, and it's kind of turned into this long and involved of comic over the years. And Rodney and I parted company quite a few years ago, and I continued it on my own. But it certainly didn't have any long range plans at the beginning. It's kind of been a very organic process to see where it's gone over the year.
Before you did Mega Tokyo, mm-hmm. reading through your site, and it said you had you meant to do another one beforehand, Warm?
Yes, I did. The whole point of working on Mega Tokyo as a webcomic was the idea that I could get a little practice making comics. Because, it's about, learning, because I didn't feel I drew well enough, and I could use the practice and some practice making comics and keeping to some sort of schedule. And sort of over the years, this little side project that I was just going to be a little bit of practice, that's still going. I haven't the other one yet. So, of course, in the process, some of the ideas that I had for Warmth have become incorporated into Mega Tokyo itself. So in some ways, as a precursor, there's certain themes and certain ideas that over time have kind of grew into what I've done with Megatokyo itself. So that other story is still there, and one of these days I do intend to sort of step on it and see what happens. It'd be interesting to actually try to develop something where I actually know what I'm going to do with the, you know, two or three comics from now. A planned story would be an interesting challenge for me, I think.
Okay, so what's the main story behind Megatokyo? What's it all about?
Well, basically, I mean, the genesis of what made it what it was. I mean, when we started it, it's like, well, what are we going to do? How about we, you know, we just fly to Japan and, you know, kind of get stuck there. So, I mean, seriously, that was the developmental process that started it. And so we had, I think he goes, send me a picture. So he sends me a picture, and I'm like, oh, okay, I'll just draw something that looks like you. And I drew something that sort of didn't look like me. And we just sort of, it just sort of started very randomly. And Rodney was the type of guy who his interest was mainly in a lot of gaming jokes, and, you know, a big Penny Arcade fan, big fan of that type of thing. And my interest, of course, was in more, you know, of story-driven manga and, you know, romance comedy type stuff. And I figured, you know, hey, as we're doing this, we can sort of balance the two. We have a lot of humor here. We have a little bit of kind of the crazy off-the-wall humor that Rod liked to do. Over the years, it's sort of conflicted with itself a lot, because, you know, when the more that the story started to develop, the more difficult it became for Rod to interject kind of wild and sort of off the wall stuff, because it always interfered with, you know, whatever story structure was developing. So that's one of the things that led to us sort of splitting over time. But without question, the main concept behind the story, which is you've got Piero and you've got Largo, who are two very different types of characters. I could probably not have come up with Largo by myself initially. And they both, you have these things where Rodney wanted to have zombies running around Tokyo killing people. And I, for me, having some sort of romance comedy with zombies running around didn't work. So I sort of did his jokes and did mine, and they sort of didn't meet very well. What they did is it sort of formed this idea, and I think it's pretty true, is that different people have, you know, everybody's got their own sort of unique view of the world. You know, they've got their own perceptions. You know, like, you know, you like this stuff, you hate that stuff, and you form your own ways of seeing things. When I was in New York once, I remember, you know, walking down the street, and, you know, you get the normal hustle and bustle of the city, and I just happened to look down one side street, and there's this big building fire with, you know, emergency vehicles and all sorts of stuff going on. And then as I continued across the street, then, you know, I didn't see it anymore. And, you know, it occurred to me, you know, it's probably not impossible that in a, you know, a big city or type of environment that you can have, you can, if you don't see something, you, is it really happening or not? So I sort of took that to ridiculous extremes with things. You've got, yeah, you know, Rodney running, I mean, Largo running, okay, around with zombies and all sorts of crazy ninjas and all sorts of stuff going around. But I offer the counterpoint that, you know, you've got Piero, who's, you know, goes to Japan, and all of a sudden he's got all these girls that are involved with him in one way, shape, or another. And I sort of ask the question, you know, whose reality is more fake? So it's been an interesting balance, and it's proven to be a, you know, good story mill, grist for the story mill, in many cases. Pain to write, though, I gotta tell you sometimes.
Yeah, I can imagine. I think one of my favorite bits of Megatokyo is when Largo gets a credit card and he builds up a defense perimeter out of cardboard boxes and computer parts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love that bit. That always sticks in my head when I think of Megatokyo.
It just seems like the type of thing he'd do. He's like the most brilliant guy in the world, but, you know, he's also the type of guy that he would throw himself down the stairs and he'd get up and do it again, and there'd be a reason for it. And if you listen to his logic, it would make sense, you know. of course, his friend, you know, Piero's like, you know, what is it with this idiot? So, but yeah, you know, it's trying to come up with the kind of crazy things Largo might do, especially after I started taking over the story on my own, was really difficult. I kind of surprised myself. I think I actually like Largo better than Piero these days. Interesting character to write for. Piero gets on my nerves a lot, so maybe that's good. Maybe that's the way it's supposed to be.
No, Largo's just a fun character, isn't he, really? Mm-hmm. I suppose he's a lot of fun to write for.
Yeah, the story wouldn't be interesting if it was just Piero. And, you know, kind of going back and looking at, you know, your own writing, you learn a lot about your own, how you do things and what you're interested in. And, you know, it's like, oh, I like this particular type of story, and if you just do that, it's the thing that makes things interesting sometimes is contrast. You know, and if you're just absorbed in one particular genre or one particular mood, it's really hard to make it interesting. But, you know, you put all these different things contrasting, and then, you know, crikey, you know, you take, you know, Pyrrho and you, or Largo, and you throw him again up against Erica, who is his, you know, you sort of put her in as the opposite to him, right? You know, as far as I was concerned, when I first started throwing them together, I didn't have any hopes of them having any potential of anything other than her breaking his arm on a regular basis. So I sort of let the characters do their own thing, and I was kind of surprised the places that's gone, really. Probably some of my favorite stuff in the comic so far. So very character-driven, I guess.
Yeah, it does seem like a very character-driven story.
It does. A testament to how popular comic has become is that you've hit quite high spots for best web comic online a fair few times. How's that made you feel?
Nervous.
Absolutely terrible.
I'm the type of person I always worry about letting people down on it's a neurosis of mine. You know, it's like, I'm not doing a good enough job. I'm not, you know, my art hasn't lived up to expectations. The story is not as good as it should be. So what do? I go off and I create a comic that has thousands of fans. So I've got like thousands of people I can disappoint on a regular basis. No way I've done this to myself. It's been an interesting challenge in a lot of ways, and there's nothing more rewarding than to hear people talk about, you know, work that you've done. And, you know, I always try to, you know, you always encourage people to, you know, to put their own work out there to work. I mean, webcomics are a great medium because they're the type of thing that you can start out and start making one. Your artwork can be terrible, your story can be, you know, not that great. If you work at it long enough, you'll get better because practice helps, and you're also building a backlog of material for your site. So if you finally get to the point where you sort of get your things rolling, you've got a established backlog of stuff for people to read, and people like that. So webcomics are a nice medium in that respect. They really are.
Yeah, so at what point did your stuff start to get rolling?
Supposedly from the beginning, I guess. Which, when I look at some of my older artwork, when Kodansha approached me about doing a, you know, Japanese version of Megatokyo, not on books, I quite seriously asked them. I said, you know, is there a way we could skip the first couple of books and maybe move into the third book? The first couple of books the idea of going to a Japanese audience who's used to, you know, the kind of quality work that they see on a regular basis with, you know, my first stuff was, I wasn't so sure about that. You know, they were pretty keen on starting it right from the beginning. But, you know, I mean, I get a lot of criticism. You know, people think that it hasn't changed and it's no good and it's still no good. I would say that, yeah, it's still pretty crappy. But, I mean, I have improved a little bit over the years, I think. So,
how did it go over in Japan as a manga?
Not too. I mean, it didn't really do too much. Mainly, in a lot of ways, it's because it wasn't something that was pushed very hard. And secondly, you got to remember that, lucky me, you know, they finally get to, you know, have a book published in Japan during the time when their publishing industry basically was collapsing around their ears. You know, I mean, you know, we talk about how bad the book publishing industry and printing industry has been in the U.S. It started to get bad in Japan first. So, the manga industry in Japan has been suffering for quite a while. So, you know, it's really hard to get a foothold, I guess. And in Japan, they have, you know, kind of established routes where, you know, people get into, you know, different magazines. They have competitions. People sort of get exposure that way. They can, you know, work for other artists. And series can get serialized, and you get that sort of experimentation where if it becomes popular, eventually it can go into the route where it can eventually become, they start looking at it as a candidate for animating. You know, I mean, there's a system that you can be sort of be a part of where, you know, and you're just doing a webcomic, you know, you're just this guy, you know, and you're just making stuff, and hey, we got a book or two here too. So, to be honest with you, I was more than, I was quite honored that they wanted to, they actually approached me about doing a, you know, translating a volume over there. So hopefully in the near future, we'll, you know, at some point here, we'll see some more volumes. Because I do think it, you know, some of the later volumes would do better. Because I think some of the yeah. stuff is very gamer, sort of disjointed humor. And you don't know if, you know, if people had a chance to get into the story that they might find it more interesting. So I don't know. It's kind of hard to tell.
So I always thought that the video game stuff came on top of the story. It's kind of like subtitles to it. So I always thought.
Oh, you mean in the Megatokyo comic itself?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
like it didn't really distract from the story. I mean, it's fun to watch, but it didn't really take it away.
Oh yeah. I'm trying. You mean where in the translate? I'm trying to figure out what you're asking about. Where I've shown sort of the gaming elements in the comic itself.
Like say at the beginning where he first contacts, gets down into Japan and he's not allowed in and he has to, you know, obviously get on a arcade machine and fight his way in. I don't think that distracts from the story at all.
Yeah. Oh.
So that's like a nice little added bit.
That's actually one of those things that, you know, it was one of those Rodney things, like, well, how are they going to get into Japan? Oh, well, maybe he can beat Junpei at Mortal Kombat, and it can be the Mortal Kombat video game. You know, it's a joke. And years later, as I'm thinking, oh, God, no, he got into Japan on a Mortal Kombat visa. And thinking, you know, this is unrealistic. But then over time, I'm like, that's actually kind of a cool way. Of course, that would be how Largo got in. So you start to accept some of the stuff that some of the jests and the jokes that happened earlier, and kind of see where, you know, the value is in the humor for that. So yeah, I mean, I went through a time period where I was just rolling my eyes at a lot of the that sort of humor, going, oh my God, I can't believe I have to deal with zombies, you know. But then after time, you know, you start seeing how that impacts both sides of the story in some ways, and the contrast, and it actually turned out to be a rather interesting element of the story in the end.
Yeah, so, okay, that's...
Over the years, has it become more difficult to add in that sort of joke?
Yeah, well, it has. One reason being, I mean, it's only natural that, you know, my own interests and the types of things, you know, the feels or the things that I tend to go for, have a tendency to stick up in the story more than, you know, the biggest complaint you'll hear is like, oh, the comic had sucked ever since, you know, Rodney left. And, you know, there's a lot to that, in that there's elements of randomness that, you know, I don't have to try to play with anymore. And there's, you know, it turns out I have that sort of humor myself, but it's not quite as random. So I do try to, there's things that come up every once in a while that I try to throw in, and it's funny how out of the blue it can be. And I just try to make sure that I'm open to random things like that from out of the blue that maybe, you know, normally I might have just sort of, you know, brushed off and not thought about, you know, or instead of just being the sort of random little joke, it might become something important in the story. So I've kind of learned how to work with that over time.
Have you ever had ideas that came up like that have come up from fans that you've used?
Actually, I try not to do that too much, because what I do is I'll read sort of the tenor or the get a sense of what people are saying in general. To me, it doesn't seem proper to, if somebody has an idea and they post it in the forums, to go, hey, that's a pretty cool idea, I think I'm going to run with that. Because what you're doing is that if you didn't come up with it, it's kind of, you're kind of stealing a fan's idea, you know what I'm saying? So I try hard not to do that, unless if I was going to do something like that, I'd have to make sure I gave the person credit. However, there's, you know, what you'll see is you'll see kind of a thread or a line of thought of what people are expecting, and you know, there's two things you can do. You can either sort of run with that, or more often than not, I try to trip up people. You know, you sort of, when you're dealing with there's a lot of memes and themes and kind of standard tropes in anime and manga that, you know, I will definitely play with. You know, I'll start going in one direction with some characters, and it looks like they're going to do something that's very standard in, you know, anime and manga viewership stories. And, you know, the next thing I know in the forums, I'll say, oh, my God, I can't believe he's going to do that. Oh, I can't stand this. You know, I can't believe he's going to go that way. And it's like, no, let me finish. Because what I'm doing is I'm tired of poking fun at the genre more often than not. So it's amazing how strong the that can be, you know, that sort of the expected route. Sort of like the beach episode is a standard thing, you know, or like the bathhouse episode. You know, I've trolled that twice. You know, the first time that I started to get into that, you know, I completely skipped over it and went to after the bath scene, you know, and then here later on, a more recent chapter, I actually indulged in it quite blatantly. So, you know, I think that one of the more interesting things, one of the reasons I think people make or build works of whatever they do, whether it's a, you know, it's a comic or they write stories and they gain a following of people or readers, as if you gain a following of a readership or basically what you're getting is you're getting an audience that you control mercilessly, and if you want to, you know, there's many animes that are famous for this. This is a captive audience who are going to, you can just tease ridiculously. You know, my fans have a tendency to refer to, they have to take what I say in public with a grain of salt, because they've sort of caught on to, sometimes I'll do things like, you know, red herrings, they call them Fred herrings. May or may not go, you know what, sometimes, you know, there's a grain of truth. Sometimes I'll talk about something that seems ridiculous and they don't believe me for a second, but the truth is it is actually what I see happening. So that sort of thing is fun. I think that a lot of readers have sort of enjoyed that sort of interaction. And I think if you produce something where you start to finish, you've written the whole thing yourself, work with an editor or whatnot, and then it goes out and then people get to enjoy it, you don't get to experience that sort of feedback, and, you know, where people are sort of, they're involved actually in ways that, you know, they're not actually writing and they're not actually telling you what to do. But as you're sort of seeing what people are getting or not getting, you can adjust what you're doing accordingly. And that's been valuable to me over the years. That's why I like to do things openly and release it one page at a time. And, you know, I draw online where people can come and see what I'm up to. You know, I just kind of like the open process better.
It's a nice clean way of doing things, especially if you want to mess with people.
Oh yeah. Everybody probably. You know, I mean, it's, you know, have you ever come across, you know, there's a lot of times people have come across people and they want to, I've got this great story idea. And then what they do is they'll sit down and they'll tell you all about it. They'll tell you all the details about the world. They'll tell you all the details about how the story goes and what happens. And it's very much like some sort of outline. And you just want to, like, please stop. Please, you know, just a minute. And it's not because you don't want to hear it. Stories are the type of thing that have to be, you have to experience them, you know. And, you know, if you're just given data sheets about a story, there's no story in the world that's going to be interesting if you're just given it all right away. I mean, it's what makes them interesting is experiencing the story. I mean, that's why we rewatch stuff. Even if we know what the story is, a lot of times we'll rewatch it or reread it because we enjoy it. So that's an important thing that I think some people, it takes a while for them to learn that. So you got to keep things to yourself, but that's, you know, it's fun to tease out things, but, you know, you got to remember that you can't just tell everybody everything, because then you've taken the fun out of the story.
Yeah, totally. I've understand that. So how far ahead do you actually plan out then, or is it all like wing it?
Winging it. Well, I have rough ideas about where things are going in the comic, vague places. And it's funny, if, you know, I look back at my notes over the years, I mean, the comic's direction has changed drastically over time, because what happens is, as I'm going along, a lot of times when I writing in text is not really where kind of the creative bits comes out for me. It's when I'm actually drawing. And a lot of times I'll draw characters for a comic and I've got a script for it. And then I realize as I'm drawing it that this character would not say that, or this character would react differently. And all of a sudden it totally changes the direction. I mean, I've had complete changes in story direction based on how a character drawing came out. And it wreaks havoc with organization.
I can imagine.
But in the end, I mean, some of the strongest things that have happened in the story have been a result of me following, you know, a subtle sort of bent or that subtle sort of thing that I thought a character might be trying to tell me. So I often refer to it as kind of, there's one side of my brain that's sort of writes the story, and it doesn't talk to the rest of me hardly ever. So I'll be going along and all of a sudden I'll be like, oh my God, this actually ties in with something I did 5 years ago. Why won't you talk to me and tell me about these things? You know, so I don't know. For some crazy reason, it does seem to hold together and work. There's some things that don't come off as well as I'd like, and other things that come off a lot better than I thought. So, and I think that's the nature of, you know, if this is the type of thing where if I'd written it all straight up and had been able to edit it and do all that, I don't think it would have been anywhere near as interesting over time.
Fair enough. Well, okay, so I think we should start talking about your Kickstarter.
Oh, yeah, the game. So,
yeah. Although, you know, just need to get into that.
Yeah, well, the game is an extension of doing this. I mean, it's not really a separate thing. In fact, the main reason I really like doing a visual novel type game like this is any other type of game, a Kickstarter would have gone toward a company or group that would have put a lot of time and effort into programming and developing a structure for a game architecture and all this other stuff. And I probably wouldn't have even really been involved all that much. With this, it's a game that I can actually be very heavily involved in producing, you know, and being part of actually making it. And that's, so it's really an extension of what I'm doing. It doesn't replace the comic, but it's something that's very much part of the project itself overall. So it's valid to talk about the stuff we've talked about all will apply to what makes the game happen in the long run.
So obviously it goes along the same storyline as Megatokyo itself then.
Yes, and what my original, the first thought, well, the first thought that I had when I started thinking about doing a game was that, you know, I would do one of the games inside the story. There's Kimiko is doing voice acting for a game called Sight, and some other things are going on. And I thought, well, maybe I could do that game as a visual novel, you know, and that would be an interesting side project. And then for some reason, it occurred to me, well, what if I did try to do Megatokyo in that way? And at first, I was thinking of doing sort of the NVL type format, which is basically, it's very linear. You're basically just telling a straight story, but you're using images and backgrounds and stuff like that to color it. And so the more I played with that idea, the more I kind of wanted to go with a more traditional visual novel format or adventure game format where you are making decisions like, am I going to talk to her or am I not going to talk to her? And kind of seeing, all of a sudden what you get is you get these branching story paths, which are, you know, it's not a new thing. This is it's a very old concept in a lot of ways. But as I do this, what I can do is I can actually explore all sorts of different story options. You know, like I was saying, you know, the story went a direction I wasn't expecting. It's kind of interesting to be able to do both or to maybe see whether there's other crazy options that to sort of explore different avenues. So it's a little bit like writing a doujinshi or a fan comic a work of my own stuff is what it comes down to. So and of the ability to the trolling ability in doing this is actually amazing because a lot of fans have their own sort of favorite things. Like they sort of see two characters. They really like that concept or they're a real fan of one character over another. So, yeah, some people are going to be real happy with some things and not happy with others. So it's going to be interesting to explore that. So it's an extension of what's been going on with the comic in general anyway.
Okay, well, so are we going to see stuff within the game that we haven't seen in the comic?
Oh, yeah, actually quite a bit.
Awesome.
Because the idea is that what you're going to have is you're going to have the canon route, basically, which is for the different characters. Now, when you're playing as a character, if you're playing as Pyro, you're only seeing what Pyro sees. You're only thinking, you know, basically, you're in his shoes. The comic, the way it's set up, actually what it does best is it sort of contrasts. You see Largo's view, and then you see Pyro's view, and you see that contrast. When you're playing the game, you don't have that contrast. You're actually only seeing his view. You may see things at the edges that if you're familiar with the comic or if you play some of the other routes, you may realize that Largo's seeing this differently than Pyro did. So you've got the same story, but it may sound completely different because it's a different character that's playing it. So you know, just that perception alone, it's going to be the same story. But I think, so far I think it's been pretty interesting to see how different it feels when you're just one character paying attention. And when you're dealing with some of the other characters I've had, like Kimiko or Erica, they're not in focus in the comic as much. And you're going to see there's a lot more that goes on with them that you see in the background that will tie into things that you might be familiar with. But, you know, just sort of experiencing that, so there's going to be a lot more details and a lot more interesting things that'll show up as a result of that. And then, of course, you know, like I said, there's a canon route where you're going to be following where the story is in the actual comic, which might not be easy. You may find yourself getting off track and not able to follow it, but, you know, that's a whole other matter. But then there's also going to be these side branches where a story may go in a direction that is totally different from the current story. I mean, there's some pretty horrifying paths, and there's some pretty exciting, interesting paths, too. For that, in other words, you know, these games typically have good endings, you know, bad endings or neutral endings, you know, the world blows up endings. In this, I mean, one of the things about the comic itself is there's no guarantee that all the storylines in Megatokyo all lead to good endings. I mean, even I don't know where that's going to go. So it's going to be interesting to sort of explore that in the game.
So would it be possible in the game to route off the main story and like start a new story?
You will be able to route off the main story quite a bit, actually, depending on, you know, there's kind of the architecture of these types of games, there's some things that happen. You can make a choice at one point in the game and not see anything drastically change between, you know, going one direction or another until something happens later. You know, there's variables that, you know, kind of add up or subtract depending on things that you do. There are points where, you know, actually even in the existing, in the little preview that we did, where Kimiko says hi to, Kimiko is there, and does Piero just choose to talk to her or not? You know, if he doesn't talk to her, you know, they still end up going to the beer garden, but, you know, he didn't have that little interaction with her, and that may have an impact later on. So you get these things that loop back to, you know, that storyline that you're following. Sometimes you may choose something like at the beginning, let's say, Piero decides to not bring Largo with him.
No way. Can that happen?
Think about how different that is. So
that would be very different. Yeah, yeah.
And you know, there'll probably be a number of, you know, very quick bad endings where you go this way, you go this way, and all of a sudden, you know, you get a police officer, picks you up, tosses you in a box, and takes you to FedEx and ships you back home, and game over. I mean, you know, there's you know, those kind
of
things.
That'd be brilliant.
There may be the number of ways that there are to get home from Japan, I'm going to explore all of them, because, you know, when you trip and fall, you know how it is when you trip. If you're playing a video game, there's, you know, there's a sort of a typical way that a character dies in a video game. Well, in this one, there's a lot of death paths, and I got to make them all interesting. So, but that's part of the fun, you know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That'd be damn interesting. Well, when you set this up, you said earlier you didn't think you'd get make as much on it as you did. So when you did, well, when you started to make more money, were you already planned for adding extra reward tiers?
I had sort of planned things. I probably pretty tightly budgeted, thinking, well, if I do get another, you know, if I go another $5,000, I could probably do this, you know, and basically saying that, because, you know, each character's path is basically like writing a novel, you know. So every time you added characters at the beginning, I was writing novels. But I think that what happens is there's a lot that goes into putting these games together. Like the difference between the 20,000, the game that I would have done at a budget of 20,000 is a lot different than the budget of the game at 100,000. I mean, there's just so many more things that I can do. I can, you know, I might be able to, you know, do, you know, far more frames or far more depth or far more length in some things than, you know, if I'm sort of running out of time. I mean, I still have a time constraint. I still want to get this thing done in February, so, I mean, it's not wide open. But it gives me a lot more options to explore a lot of different things. And there's a lot of things that are going to go into this game that are not part of any stretch goal. I mean, there's all sorts of Easter eggs and sort of odd little angles and tributes and things that I might do. Some of them are things that I'd like to look at doing, but I'm not sure whether we can. And it's pretty hard to put a budget number on those. And that's why, you know, it's really hard to say, oh, if we hit this goal, I'm going to do, like, for instance, I'll do an iOS and an Android version of the game. I mean, I would love to do that, but the problem is that there are some technical issues that really don't know what it will take to do that, and I hate to promise something and then find that we can't do it for some reason later on. So,
of course, yeah.
You know, there are things that I'd like to do in the game that, to be honest with you, I'd sort of like to keep them under my hat until until people sort of, because there's going to be, you know, a lot of things that are undocumented Easter eggs, a lot of codes and things that will do things at different points, and I sort of want to be able to surprise people a little bit with things. And you know, I'm not dealing with a 3D engine or some sort of really big involved complicated game engine in some ways. I mean, it's actually a lot more complicated than you think working on it with it. But a lot of the things that I'm going to do, have to fit within the type of structure that I can make happen. And it's actually kind of interesting to work with. It's like a lot of people who work with 8-bit graphics, like the old school sort of graphics. I mean, pixel graphics. I mean, they can be really interesting. You can do a lot of stuff with that stuff, even if you're dealing with sort of low color and low bitmaps. But it all depends on just how you apply it.
So, oh, cool. Quite interesting.
Yeah, cause, I mean, these things are visual novels. I mean, I don't know if you guys are familiar, if you've ever played any or sort of gone through them. One of the things that concerned me a little was the English language audiences. Visual novels are popular in Japan in a lot of ways, but in the States they've had trouble getting any sort of foothold. It's not a very robust genre here.
I've never really interacted with one.
Yeah, well, they tend to be, they're like, you get in, there's a lot of reading. A lot of times the artwork is very similar as you're going along, and you'll have the same backgrounds and same things that'll come up. But the idea is that they're immersive, in that as you get into them and as you start to, it's like it's funny, people complain about them not having robust, animated graphics and 3D and stuff like that, but books and novels don't either. the reading experience is a big part of it, and what you're doing is you're sort of expanding upon just the basic reading experience with there's a little bit that's a little bit like a puppet show in some respects, and if you do it along all of, if you've got sort of these simple things that you're used to, and then all of a sudden you get to something special happens within the course of the game, where a graphic is far more complicated. It's like you've done, that's an accomplishment. You've gotten to a point where you've gotten something really extra. So sort of how you balance all that stuff can be, a very rewarding and interesting experience for readers. So, I mean, I can't do an animated version of Megatokyo. Everybody asks me, it's the biggest question. It's like, hey, can you do an anime? Yeah, sure, I'll get going on that right now,
give me 20.
Give me 20 minutes, yeah.
I know guys who could probably animate their own stuff, but that's certainly not me. I mean, I'm slow enough. But, I can, it's the type of thing where it's bringing it into another type of media that it is a different way to experience it. Like, it's point of view, there's lots of different things going on, plus you've got, different graphics, and there's color and all sorts of other things that are not in the comic itself. So it's taking the comic and going through it in a way that, because you know how it is, if you got a book or a manga that you like a lot and then they make a movie of it, and if the movie's good, it doesn't replace the manga. It's just another way of experiencing the story, and if they're both good, that's good,
Yeah.
They aren't always both good, but sometimes they are. So
hardly ever the case.
Do you think this would work as an anime? Like, if you were approached?
I'm sorry.
Hey, we want to do this as an anime.
Oh, no. Well, yeah, probably. My personal amused thought would be, it would be so amusing to have somebody, a studio like Gainax to take over MT. I'd be like, just here's the keys, just go with it. Because I would trust them to totally be so far off the wall with what they would do that I'd be happy. It's like, just go crazy with it, So, I mean, it's the type of thing where, when an animated anything like that, aside from, it's such a complicated process. I mean, there's no real structure. I mean, if you look at here in the States, I mean, they had trouble even making the Evangelion movie, and Cameron is supposed to do the Battle Angel stuff, and I don't know if that's going to go anywhere. I mean, you're talking about big properties with these big guys behind it, and they don't go anywhere. So, if you realistically look at it, I'm just this tiny little webcomic thing, but, if it were to happen, I mean, it would be very much colored and, would be made better by whatever studio or whatever group of people were working on it, because, I'm not an animator, I'm not a director, and taking something that's seven books large and distilling that down into an essence that would make it work, I've often told people, it could probably be the absolute worst animated show or live-action TV show or movie ever made, because there's so many tropes and things that in it that I work with that if you don't handle the subtle stuff right, it could be horrifying. So in some ways, that terrifies me. But in other ways, you know, if you had somebody who really got it and did their thing to it, it'd be pretty neat. So, hey, who knows? Life is long. We'll see.
I hope so. I think it'd be damn interesting.
Yeah, totally. I'd love to see an anime of Megatokyo. I'm pretty much out of questions, actually.
Yep.
Small lot. What advice would you give to people doing their own webcomics, say they want to get into webcomics?
Oh, well, in making your own webcomics, well, the advice is pretty simple, is just get started. I've known people they've wanted to do a webcomic or they want to get started on a story, and, you know, 3 years later, they're still thinking about it and they're still trying to get organized and they're still trying to make it work because they feel like that their first comic needs to be so awesome that's it. You know, I mean, the nature of the internet is you can have an awesome comic in the midst of all the comics that you do, and it could make the front page of Reddit or something, and you get, like, you know, 10 billion hits in, like, a week, and then nobody ever comes back after that. I mean, it's a holistic thing. I mean, you have to create something that people, you know, I mean, I've been, you know, I had a lot of health issues last year and actually went through heart surgery in May. And which I'm actually all healed and better now, which is one of the reasons I can do
it. Nice to hear.
Awesome, yeah.
But, you know, I mean, things were real quiet with Megatokyo for at least, you know, a couple of years because of all the different health issues. And I kind of figured I did this Kickstarter. It's, well, I hope people remember me. You know, if you do stuff, people, you know, if you're a rock band, you know, and you had something popular in the 70s or the 90s, it's pretty hard to, you know, to come back in some respects. But if you're an author, and I think it applies to people who do manga and stuff like that too, people remember your work because if they get into it, even if they haven't seen anything that you've done for years, if your name pops up again, a lot of times people are like, oh, I remember that work. I remember that. And I'll actually go check it out. So it's all about over time. It's not something you're going to get instant gratification from. You can't do a comic because you really want people to praise you and tell you how awesome you are. In the end, you have to make a comic for yourself and you put it up and, you know, a lot of people say, oh, you know, I do this, all this work in this comic and nobody reads it. Well, you know, if you like what you're putting up, that's what you need to do. That's all I do. I do this comic for myself. I just happen to be lucky that it seems that a lot of the other people seem to like it too. You know what I'm saying? So the minute you start trying to build to someone else's, to another audience or somebody else's likes and dislikes, and this is the internet, there's no such thing as what everybody likes. You've got what a lot of people like and a lot of people hate, and that's everything. So, you know, it's just a question of just doing it and being stubborn about it, which I think is really hard for especially younger people because they kind of like to work on it and get people really excited about what they're doing right away. And sometimes it can take time. I believe that people will find the good stuff on the internet. You don't have to worry about promoting it. You don't have to worry about, you know, how do you get your name out there? If you do good stuff, people will find it and keep coming back, and they'll bring more people with them. You know, and that's sort of, I mean, I've never really pushed Megatokyo out there and tried to get people to read it. I just been trying to catch up all these years. People keep seeming to find it, so.
Cool. Do you have anything, Tom?
I do. Do you have any advice for people doing Kickstarter?
Oh, you know, you know, Kickstarter is the type of thing that I think, if you have an idea for a project and, you know, nobody's ever heard of what you do before, it's very difficult, I think, to get attention for your project. You know, people in, you know, webcomics or movies or people who have followers, it's a lot easier because then you've got people, you can send a lot of people your way. And usually if people are fans of your work, a lot of times they'll support what you're doing. I think for me, you know, the thing I like about Kickstarter is the idea that it's something that helps, that gives fans, that gives your followers or fans the ability to, you know, help make a project happen that might not happen otherwise, you know. And then if it really gets a lot of support, not only can they help make it happen, but they can help make it better. You know what I'm saying? And that's where the real energy, you know, that what I think really works with Kickstarter. And this project, I think, really seem to work pretty well in that respect. I've seen a lot of Kickstarters that sort of seem you know, are they really projects, or are they just doing something to do something? And I'm not sure how successful that has a tendency to be. I mean, I've a lot of people have been bugging me for years, actually, for a while now. It's like, oh, Fred, you got to do a Kickstarter. Well, I'm not going to do a Kickstarter just to do a Kickstarter, because that's not how it works. You know, you got to have something that you can do. And this project sort of grew in, you know, over time here. And as my health issues have come better, it's like, boy, what am I going to jump on now? And this is what I decided to jump on. So, you know, it's, you got to be as behind it as you want everybody else to be. And that's not easy. But at the same time, you got to watch your scaling too. Because I really didn't think. I think in my most positive, I'm like, maybe if I'm lucky, you know, this thing will hit, you know, will push to the 50K range or something like that. So, thinking that way, you know, I sort of scaled what I thought I would do with my stretch goals to that, and I sort of burned out the stretch goals way too fast, I think. But you know, it's hard to tell. I mean, that's one of those problems you can deal with. You know, it's like, ah, you know, it's. You know, and right now I'm dealing with, you know, it's at these, you know, this higher range. Now I have, you know, a year and a half's worth of work, or probably more when you look at, you know, when you're going to try to hit, you know, do one of these every 6 months. But, oh my gosh, you know, you're committing yourself to a lot of work, which I think is fine. That's kind of the whole point. But now it's like, okay, you should do more stretch goals. And I'm like, I'm kind of worried about adding things to the project, because I'm, you know, I want to be able to do this game as best I can with the people helping me, and I just worry that, you know, if you add on some big chunk of something, you might actually make the project too difficult to actually do. And I think there have been a lot of projects that have fallen into that problem, so I'm trying to be careful about it. So, and I don't know if there's any real experts on this sort of thing within, you know, familiar with Kickstarter projects, but especially if you haven't done these sort of projects before, you got to be a little careful, I think.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, no. So you're clearly very behind your project. The numbers speak for themselves.
Yeah, well, like I said, I've said that I've got the best fan base that you could possibly have, and I don't deserve the. it comes down to, gosh, you know, with the kind of response I've had and how supportive people have been, I better make a good game or people are going to be pissed. So
we'll hold you to that.
Well, you know, but I have every intention of doing that. So, I'll definitely be doing that as best I can. So hopefully people aren't worried about it.
Well, what you can do is your best in the end.
I'll definitely buy a copy.
Yeah, well, you can do your best, just hope people don't know where you live. You know, it's.
That's why my address is nowhere on the internet.
Yeah. Learn how to hide on the internet. That's gonna be the next big thing. You know?
Well, that's what nicknames are for.
True. Aliases.
Yep.
Aliases.
Oh, is it aliases?
Aliases.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Aliases. Well,
I sound like an idiot on a podcast.
No, it's.
Dead end.
It is still remarkable how many people I come across who think that Pyro's name is pronounced Pyro, as in pyrotechnics or Firestarter type Pyro. But it is actually Pyro. It's actually short. It's actually a short form of the word piroshki, which is a Russian meat bread. Which I didn't know I named myself after a Russian meat. I actually named myself after the cat in a visual novel game early on. So. You never know. You got to be careful what nickname you take on, let me tell you. You might get stuck with it forever.
Okay, I think that's actually us out of questions now.
Yeah, I'm pretty good.
Okay, good.
Come on, well, thanks so much for being on. We're going to provide a link to your Kickstarter, obviously.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that, and thank you very much for talking to me. It's been fun, been interesting. It gives me a chance to run off of the mouth about things, but you know, when that's something, you know, it's exciting stuff that's going on right here, and there's a lot to talk about. So I appreciate you guys taking the time to talk to me.
No, it's all right.
Thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
You got anything you'd like to quickly say to your fans?
Well, other than thank you, I have to say the amount of trust that you guys have been put in me on this project has been kind of overwhelming, and I take it very seriously. So. This is going to be a good game, even if it kills me. So it will be a good game.
Well, it's fantastic.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Okay.